Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number Hello? All right, here we go. All right.
Yeah, I guess.
I can hear you all right. I think we're.
Yeah, I'm having to call on my phone because it wouldn't run through Skype for whatever reason. We just kept on calling and not logging in. So we'll have to make sure we talk very slowly, not over each other.
Sounds great.
Yeah. I don't know what's up with it. And then I'll just go ahead and edit all this out. So I'm going to play the song again, and we'll start from the beginning, okay?
Sounds great.
All right. And I'm sorry if you're listening live. You know, it happens sometimes with this goddamn contraption.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Ballred Radio. My name is Matt Weston, and tonight I'm joined by the biggest, baddest, drunkest of them all, BFD. Hey, how's it going?
I'm still singing the Oilers song. I hope that's okay with everybody, just mentally. That's what I'm doing. So I think tonight what we need to do, if we're going to have a super delay, is make sure we pass it over. So, you know, when I'm done speaking, go Matt, and then that way we can avoid the talking over each other.
I think that'd be very good radio. But we'll just make sure we talk like we're a 75-year-old married couple. Well, God damn it, Mariel, and then long pauses, and we'll do it like that. We'll make it all work. But so I guess...
Did you take your pills today, Matt?
Yeah. So I guess after this game, emotionally, like, how do you feel? Are you happy that they won? Are you upset they played so bad for so long against such a bad defense? Where are you at, you know, mentally after this game on Sunday night?
It's a little from column A, a little from column B. You know, I was by the end of the, you know, before we started the rally in the fourth quarter, I was just thinking, my goodness, we just really are an erratic, inconsistent team. And I'll just be honest, the last half of the fourth quarter really didn't change that, did it? Right? Because we played incredibly erratic. We went from being just an absolute terrible, terrible squad, especially offensively. The defense, you know, was balling all game. And all of a sudden, Brock Osweiler rediscovered that he's an NFL quarterback and he can actually throw the ball against opposing defenses and not look terrible doing it occasionally. So it was really, it was a truly an emotional game because it was the lows were low and the highs were high. And at the end of it, I remember just thinking, all I want is whiskey. Matt?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I'm very happy that they won. But I'm like, subjectively, it was awesome. But objectively, it was terrible. The Texans play the 31st, you know, ranked defense according to DVOA, 31st by passing. In this game, Brock Osweiler, you know, led this team to 9 points on their first 9 drives. And it's just kind of inexcusable. You know, we talked about last week that this is like playing in Chicago. It's like playing against Tennessee. This is a bad defense, and Brock Osweiler needs to play good in these games. If he's not playing good against these teams, what's the chance he's going to play decent for Houston to be a defense like Minnesota where they were destroyed? Or even next week against Denver. And so, I mean, I just don't, like, I understand you'd be happy about the win, but I don't necessarily think you'd be happy about this team's, like, performance or, like, the offense moving forward. And so we had a question from
one more here.
From somewhere. This is so silly. It's like I just installed Internet Explorer on this computer out of nowhere. Well, I can't say the name of the person now, but the question was, after the way they performed the second half, do you think this is like a turning point for Brock Osweiler and this Houston's offense? Is this something we're going to see more of, or is this just kind of like it all kind of clicked at the end, and you know, the past 5 weeks is more the norm than Sunday night being sort of some sort of turning point?
My answer would be is I don't necessarily see it as a turning point. I see it as an outlier, because right now the preponderance of evidence, which is, you know, the other however many quarters of the season, he's really only put together like two good quarters and a half a quarter out of the 24 that we've played. And so when you look at it, you know, right now him playing well is an outlier. Him playing poorly is what we've seen consistently. So until we start seeing more evidence that he's not, you know, that he's playing well in a third of quarters, perhaps, or, you know, a quarter of quarters, that would be great. That we're going on at that point yet. So I don't see it as a turning point. Hopefully it is. Going to the first question from Home Warrior, yes, I can be happy about being right, and I can be happy about being wrong at the same time. You know, Brock is a terrible quarterback right now, but he may not be. 3 games from now, he might actually have figured it out to Sunday night, Matt.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with that too, especially that question that Home Warrior asked, was that, like, I would prefer to be wrong and have the Texans win than be right and have them lose. Like, I know we picked them to lose, and I wasn't, didn't write some really happy long spiel after they won on Monday, or after they won Sunday whenever we wrote our incompletions on Monday, but I'd rather have them win than have them be wrong. I would hope, Osweiler kind of turn it around against this team. But again, like those last three possessions, especially with the majority of the game, I mean, we can talk about Osweiler now, and he was playing a defense that gave up the least amount of points he had this year, 22 against San Diego. They had 352 yards that game. The only reason why they didn't get any more was because San Diego had three turnovers in that one. And the defense is very slow. They can't tackle. They can't rush the passer. The only good thing they're doing is good at covering the more wide receivers, because Vontae Davis is a very good player. He's the best player on this team. And so, like I said, like, I really don't know how you meet a turning point or any some sort of, like, confidence you have going forward, because, again, this is a very bad Colts defense, like they should play this majority of the game. And also, I saw the same sort of problems that I saw all year from him, where he overreacts to the pressure, where he moves his feet and he's kind of running the pocket, and it takes him forever to reset him. The ball placement was spotty. You know, that was especially seeing the interception to DeAndre Hopkins, where he threw behind him on that in route in the middle of the field that Vontae Davis picked off. The need to keep dumping off instead of finding guys open in the center of the field. You know, they're playing cover two. They're playing cover two, man. You know, the middle of the field's open. He finally hit that throw to get the door. And so, like, everything I wrote about in that film room article is still kind of true. And so I guess what we're going to do now is we're going to do a new segment where we came up with the Osweiler meter. And so it's from, you know, 1 through 5, and the levels are: 1 is Brock Bottom, 2 is Rottweiler, 3 is Brock Yoker, 4 is Glock Osweiler, and 5 is Godweiler. So on the Brockometer, where are you at after this game?
After this game, I think I'm at level 2, which I can't remember which, what we call level 2, if you can say it again.
Number 2 is Rottweiler, which is really good.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's where we're at right now. I think that if we would have lost this game, we'd be at Brock Bottom. But I think we're at DEFCON level 2 with Helm right now. There is a glimmer of hope, so we're going to hope the terrorists aren't going to win. But it's still ugly. It's still ugly. That's his best game as a Texan, and a QB rating of 90.7. And you really, if that's your best game against, really, it's a horrible defense. It really is. And he still only averaged 6.9 yards per attempt. There's a lot of problem there still. And, you know, we supposedly put together a team with a lot of offensive talent to be able to pick up chunk yards. And as of right now, we're not really doing that very well. And it goes back to Brock. But I think with that glimmer of hope, we'll go DEFCON too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Lamar Miller had 5.5 yards rushing per carry. And – you know, Osweiler, I think, averaged 6.9 yards an attempt. So it's like, okay, well, your passing game is barely, you know, to get more yards than your running game is. Yeah, I mean, it would be Brock Bottom, and then that you know, those 17 points in a row that won this game kind of picked it up to Rottweiler. But, you know, again, he's just been really bad. And so this week, the passing game was a little bit different. They still subsisted on a lot of dink and dunks. The difference this week was in several out throws towards the center field and a lot of, you know, out routes to the flat to CJ Fedoritz, Ryan Griffin, and Jalen Strong. They really focused on DeAndre Hopkins this time. And so Hopkins was targeted 15 times. He had 9 catches. The problem was he only averaged 7.1 yards a catch. And so do you think in this game, like, that he was just being force-fed, where the fact was they just weren't getting DeAndre Hopkins the ball enough, so they just were trying to force passes this way? Or was Hopkins legitimately open, and do you think he was deserving of those attempts?
Well, I'd like to look at it a little bit differently, because if we're going to judge quarterbacks on yards per attempt, I think we kind of need to do the same thing with wide receivers and yards per target. And if we put it in that perspective, yeah, it's a whopping 4.7 yards per target for DeAndre Hopkins. That's approximate. That is not how people want to use this dude, you know? I get it. We're struggling. Teams are really, you know, cutting down on what we do best. But you know what DeAndre Hopkins does best? If he wins 50-50 ball, and you give him an opportunity to make those catches at the sideline, give him the opportunity to run an out, to run a smash, and let him beat a defensive back that way. And right now, we're just not even allowing that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, like, a lot of things, too, is he was playing in 1-on-1 coverage. And with Hopkins, they were running a lot of same routes, where it was kind of like Vontae Davis was playing so far inside in that shallow part of the field that they were just running the same routes over and over again. And he wasn't really even, like, going against man coverage. I assume like Vontae Davis was kind of playing that zone right there, where he was just really sitting on, you know, out routes and comeback routes, and that's all he's really been throwing. And like that almost interception he had on that kind of sort of fade down the sideline, Vontae Davis just kind of sitting like, you know, 8 yards deep right there, expecting that throw, and now they're severely underthrew it, and it probably should have intercepted. And so I don't think they really did like enough of, you know, using him in the slot to have him attack the middle of the field, having him run some double moves and those sorts of things. I think it's just really like vanilla the routes they were running, where they're like, okay, well, it's, you know, 2nd and 7. We got to get something on, you know, for make 3rd down better. So let's just force it to Hopkins again. And there's also a lot of throws, too, where he's taking the snap and he's just staring Hopkins' way. And he's going to throw him the ball no matter what, where he's not really – he just has one read. It's to the right. And it's just kind of like a, you know, Case Keenum sort of quarterback style whenever he was first there, where he just kind of locked in one guy and threw it that way to their best players. And so I think that part was kind of frustrating because Hopkins is such a dynamic receiver, but they just didn't do really dynamic things with him. It was just when they took the – how they were using Fedorowicz and Griffin and Strong with just short curls and flat routes, and then just changed it to an outside wide receiver on the right side.
Yeah, and to add on to that, you know, we talked early in the season about, you know, I talked early in the season about what I really wanted to see from my wide receivers and my route tree for the talent that we've now got is I want to see guys catching on the run. There's blew up my nose and I'm inside the house. That sucked. I want to see my receivers on the run catching the ball. I want to see Braxton Miller, catching the ball on the run. I don't want to see hooks. I don't want to see anything where the wide receiver is sitting in a zone and trying to catch the ball. I want to see him on the run so we can get – we have a better chance at yak. And because right now that's not even kind of up for discussion, right, you know? So I'm not even seeing the route side. I'd like to see what this quality of wide receivers – and we got to go back. I mean, the thing that's, you know, kind of going back to the first and Home Warriors questions is that that was UT's question, by the way. That's what's most frustrating is this is an immensely physically talented team. This is easily the most physically talented team the Texans have ever put on a field, ever. I mean, it's not even close, and we're not taking advantage of it. And that's what's really super frustrating is let's get these guys on the move, get them catching on the run, slants, just anything that's not, you know, catching with their back to the opposing end zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that's what Lucas is hampering on. He wants to see a lot more short passes and screens, Will Fuller and Braxton Miller. I think that's a much better way to throw short passes to get Brock Osweiler in rhythm than just throwing flat routes out to Griffin Fedorowicz, you know. But I think the problem, though, is that that's not what Brock Osweiler's skill is. He doesn't place the ball very well at all. And so I don't really trust him
trying
to hit. Yeah, I don't trust him all throwing a slant, hitting the ball in spot, and letting Fuller, you know, catch the ball on the run and try to break one tackle and go to the house. It's just he's not very good at it. And so I think that Texas kind of, you know, I think Bill O'Brien understands that Tune really hasn't gone about like that. I do think one of the things I want to see is, I know we talked about how I want to see Jalen Strong in the slot, but Jalen Strong can't play in the slot. He's not quick enough to beat one versus one man coverage at all whatsoever. And so really Braxton Miller needs to take over that role. And then some of the problems with this offense is that Braxton Miller is still kind of too raw to be the slot receiver, and they don't have a person to play that position. And so whenever things are covered on the outside, their options are just kind of like flat routes and dump offs. And so I really think the biggest key that needs to change in the passing offense as far as scheme is just being able to hit those throws in the middle. I mean, like I talked about in that film article, that missed throw to Hopkins in the slot, those throws need to be ran more often. Those throws need to be made. And same thing for that throw to Fedoros in the touchdown. Those are throws that are open to this offense, but they just haven't happened yet. And then the route combinations and limiting them, again, with all those flat routes, you know. This is the third progression, go high to low, nothing's open, throw here. And it doesn't work, and it sucks. But they need to start attacking the middle field downfield instead of just using it as more of a crutch in a dump-off situation.
Yeah, and you know, we can talk about that a little bit, too, and perhaps be a great improvement. And we've seen in C.J. Fedoros this season, who has not been disgustingly awful, and it's been great to see because I've said many times he was probably my favorite player coming out of that 2014 draft from a skill standpoint. But and yes, that does really include Clowney, you know, I'm talking about, you know, where they were picked and what expectations and that sort of thing. Is that if you're going to go against the cover two-man scheme, then that's a great way, or cover two, even in sitting in the zone, a great way to beat the opposing team is down the middle deep, down the middle mid. And that's where so I'm just jumping onto your point, Big Matt, that's how we need to start looking at this team a little bit more. That's how teams are going to cover. We know how to beat cover two-man schemes. We know how to do this. So let's just go out and do it. Sorry if we can't just run Will Fuller down the sideline every play and, you know, have Osweiler drop a dime. We got to be considerably more imaginative with our routes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with them very so much on the outside, you start hitting that throw in the middle, then you open up more one versus one man coverage for Hopkins and Fuller again, and that should really open up the offense. But yeah, it comes to Osweiler trusting himself to make those throws. You know, they have schemed some for it. I think it's schemed more for it. Those deeper throws in the center of the field. And I think Osweiler has had those throws open, but it's thrown short because I don't know if he doesn't trust his arm or if they have a lead and he doesn't want to go deep or, you know, what's up with him. But he's been really bad, and they've had those throws available. I think they can do a better job of making those plays called more often for this offense. And we'll go here to a question from Lawrence Person. He said the label of bust by some, C.J. Fedoros seems to be coming into his own this year. And he asked a question on Sufia, but I guess I want to talk about Fedorowicz. And I think kind of what we saw in that game yesterday was that he's been able to beat linebackers one versus one coverage or just be the type of guy who can slip behind that first level in the zone and then find a space between the linebacker and the safety. And his hands have been good. Like, he hasn't been dropping passes. I think he's a pretty, you know, mediocre blocker. But it depends on what we're running. If we're running a lot of man schemes and he has to get double teams to drive guys, he's not good at that. But he's okay enough at, like, a one-versus-one block where he just has to hold the edge and turn a small outside linebacker. And so he's been a lot better. He's a lot better than Ryan Griffin. You know, he's deserving getting all the snaps from his team. But I don't necessarily think that he's, like, a good player yet. I'm going to have to see more, you know, kind of production. But if they start throwing more seam routes, you know, he does have the speed to beat linebackers in man coverage. And he does seem to, you know, he's shown good hands as well, too.
Yeah, when he came out of college, I mean, one of the good comps on him was Gronkowski, you know? He has that sort of speed. He has that sort of quicks. And, he's 6'5". He's not a small guy. He was supposed to be a blocking specialist coming out of Iowa. But the guy had the measurables, at least, to be a very good receiving tight end. And just to you know, talk about him a little bit more, this is his third full year in the league, so he has not – you know, as far as I'm concerned, you don't reach bust status into your third year. And I don't know if I'd really call him a bust, but clearly the dude has issues. But this year he has one less reception than he did in 2015. He's already got more yards than he had in 2015. He's already got more touchdowns than he had the rest of his career. He's got two this year. He's four in his career. So we have really seen a relative statistical explosion from C.J. Fedoros. Just, you know, top of the – or, you know, back of the napkin type numbers, he's on a pace for, you know, 500 yards and six or seven touchdowns. That doesn't suck, you know, as far as your tight end, especially as we utilized them or didn't last year. Those aren't bad numbers, and they're clearly growing. So to the question is that, yes, he seems really does seem to be coming into his own, and I agree with that. I don't even want to talk about Xavier Suafila.
Yeah, we can talk about them in a second, then. A true bunch of offensive linemen. And so I guess, so this game, you're 53 minutes into it. The Texans are down by 14. And at one point, remember that they had that 3rd-and-7 on that second-to-last drive. That win probability was, you know, 1%. The Colts had 99% chance to win. And they converted that 3rd-and-7 and throw to DeAndre Hopkins, same scoring on that possession. So I guess, what was the difference between the first 53 minutes and the last 7 minutes in overtime for this offense? Was it just something the Colts were doing defensively? Was it Brock Osweiler's play? What did you see for the Texans to come back and turn around that quickly after being, you know, completely held in check on the offensive side ball for so long?
I really think that it was just Brock Osweiler finally trusting making throws, trusting himself to make throws. Talked often on the show, there's a tendency to really try to aim the ball. His mechanics are a mess and that sort of thing. And it really seemed to me that he was actually letting it go a little bit more during the last part of the game. Yeah, that's right. I went there. It's because he kind of, I don't know if he said just, you know, F it, you know, I've got nothing to lose at this point. We need to do something. I don't know what the mindset was, but whatever it was, it seemed to work. And he looked better. I don't think those are throws he makes unless he's kind of just going all Rex Grossman on it.
Yeah, I think the first possession, the Colts were definitely playing not to lose. But they were just letting Houston dink and duck and move down the field, and they saw there was 7.5 minutes left. You know, they have the Colts have 2 timeouts. The Texans need to score, you know, twice. And then, if anything, they're going to get some first downs, and they'll burn this clock out enough for to kind of slam the door closed. And for that first possession, they really played off and let, you know, Brock Osweiler complete, you know, shorter routes. So there wasn't really anybody on him. He's going to make a lot of easy throws and that sort of thing. And that second drive, I mean, he made three big throws in a row. And that one at Fedoritz was, you know, the best and the most important in the bunch. But, again, like that throw when I saw it and, you know, going back and watching it, that's a throw that an NFL caliber quarterback has to make, you know. It wasn't even spectacular. It was just it was a throw that needs to be made. And so what I liked about that was that, like, he put the ball in the right spot. I also thought it was funny to see Mike Adams come in and try to pick off the pass and then realize at the last second he wasn't get there in time and just really whiff on the tackle, and that was pretty hilarious on the game tying touchdown. And then, you know, Lamar Miller made that whole game happen on that first touchdown with all those broken tackles he had cut back across field. And so in overtime, the one really good throw he made the last part of the game was that throw to, you know, Jalen Strong, the outside one versus one coverage where, again, he's throwing a good deep ball. And so in the first couple of weeks, it's been if he's throwing the ball deep, he can be, you know, serviceable. But then they started changing defense scheme to stop what he was doing, throwing the ball downfield and outside, and he completely crapped his pants these last, you know, 4 weeks. But that, you know, he had one versus one coverage on the outside. Jalen Strong's much bigger. He puts the ball in front of him, and Jalen Strong is able to reach over and pass the cornerback to bring that one in, and it put them in field goal position to win that game. But I think the biggest thing is that the Colts are giving him a lot of stuff. It's a bad defense, and he made, you know, 2 throws that kind of won that game for him. Not necessarily, I think it was like great quarterbacking by any means. I think he made 1 great throw. Everything else was, you know, pretty serviceable. And they still got it done, though, and it was very cool to see. But, yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it was very nice to not be publicly pantsed on a national television night. We'll do that this week. But, you know, last week it was great not to have that happen.
Yeah, it was a good redemption hero story as far as Osweiler goes. And, yes, I mean, I guess as far as the passing game, that's really, you know, all I have. Like, I wrote a lot about last week and watching this game. It was, you know, pretty similar where Osweiler looked like how he did the last 4 weeks for the first 53 minutes. And then was able to turn things around in those last 3 possessions. And Houston scored 17 points in a row and was able to win. Do you have anything to add on the passing game at all whatsoever?
No. Let's move on. It's already almost 7:30.
Yeah. And I miss Will Fuller a lot, I guess, is one thing I have to say. I can't wait to watch him play again this week. The last thing on offense that really is kind of the most important thing, though, is I know Oswald has been such a topic of focus, just not for Texas fans, but on the NFL in general. But Lamar Miller was just a complete revelation in this game. He bounced runs outside over and over again. He got into space. He broke a lot of tackles. He made that was an all-time great Texas play, too, on 3rd and 7 when he took that throw. That was your 4 yards short of the sticks on 3rd and 7 in the red zone. And he broke, like, 5 tackles all the way across the field and then ran all the way back across the grain and then found a seam around field for the score that put them within 7. And then as far as the stats, he had 149 yards on the ground, 24 carries, averaged 6.2 yards per carry, not 5.5. So he almost averaged as much on the ground as Oswald did through the air per attempt. And he also had 2 touchdowns. He had 0 touchdowns leading into this game. And he was the one who got the memo that this Colts defense was really bad. So what changed for Lamar Miller in this game? Was it better blocking? Was it him just getting out in space? Or was it just him playing better and actually starting to break tackles?
I really thought about that one long and hard, while I was watching the game, because it, to me, he looked different. He looked like the Miami Dolphin version of Lamar Miller, and he has not looked like that coming into this game. That's why I keep thinking, is he hurt? Because he just didn't look like he was running hard, running quick, running fast. He didn't look like any of those things the first 5 games of the season. I think what we have is Lamar Miller with his confidence back. And because of his track record, which is, you know, a big difference, he's got a very successful track record historically. I think we're starting to see his regression to the mean from a crummy 5 games. And if he were to break out and, you know, if the line can actually come together at some point, which would help, but if he were to break out these last 11 games, 10 games, I would be the least surprised person in the world because I think, again, he's a fantastic running back. We haven't seen him yet. We finally saw him this past week.
Yeah, and with him and Miller, I never really questioned his talent. I never questioned his back free agent signing. Unlike, you know, Brock Osweiler and, you know, Jeff Allen, I got no question about Lamar Miller because it's really obvious that, you know, he's a guy who needs to be in space and they're running between the tackles and there just wasn't any space there because the offensive line was blocking really poorly. I think this game was a lot more of the Colts have a very slow defense, and so they're running runs up the middle. You know, the same runs they've been running the last 4 weeks. I saw Lamar Miller was purposely, you know, running the other way and doing the DeMarco Murray thing. We run all the way from your blockers and the outside and just outrun guys. And he was also bouncing runs play side outside the tackle. I saw some stat that, like, he averaged 12, you know, 0.1 yards running for the left side. And, again, that's not because Dwayne Brown came back and was run blocking. You know, Gray has been some, you know, huge addition on the offensive line. It's because Lamar Miller was running past a very slow defense. And so I think, you know, the vision was there. I think the coaches probably hampered on him. You know, probably brought some runs and said, look, you know, up front, we're not blocking very well. And so we're going to need you to make plays happen. You're going to have to not take what the offensive line gives you. You're going to have to go out there and make what you can make and do all the creating on your own because you're not going to get anything up from these guys. And so with that, he was really getting out in space. And it wasn't even on play calls that they were running on wide. He was taking things wide and zone. But the breaking tackle thing hadn't happened at all this year. I think his broken tackle rate was like 8.3%, which was like 39th as far as running backs go. And so all the broken tackles was a really great thing. But, yeah, I don't know how much of that is the Colts defense or how much of it is him on his own. He obviously looks faster, more dynamic. But I think a lot of that had to do with the Colts defense more than your Miller sort of like hitting a turning point at all. And I think this week in Denver it's going to be, you know, a much bigger difference as far as tackling goes.
Yeah, and I think the funniest thing, you know, looking at the, as I OCD look at the Football Outsider stats, because that's, you know, I like to do that, is he jumped up the board after this game. It's like, okay, finally, so maybe this is one part of the offense that we can kind of say, okay, phew, okay, we got our running back. Even still behind a really crappy offensive line. Maybe this is that jump off point for him. You know, as unconfident as I am in what, you know, Brock's turnaround from that game. When I look at Lamar Miller, I'm thinking, okay, here we go. He's just going to put the team on his shoulders. Let's see what he can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what Lamar Miller we're going to be used to. Well, I just don't think Lamar Miller is going to be averaging, you know, 6.5 yards a carry. I think that had a lot to do with them playing the Indianapolis Colts. But it was just a lot of fun to see him put that vision to work and get himself out in space because he was not the problem with the offense. It was the offensive line, and it was Osweiler, and so – it was awesome to see that difference for him. And then the Max Lawrence Pearson question asking about Derek Bisuvio and his ability to put things together and kind of shed that Bucs label. I mean, I think I've been watching Bisuvio you know, for like 3 years. I have a PhD in socio. He follows me on Twitter. I think I wrote, you know, two whole articles on him. You know, I made this joke before. And like, I've, you know, watched a lot of offensive line play. And, you know, Sucio's as average as you can be for an offensive guard. Like, the different role, and the problem with him is that he hasn't really matured at all as far as from a skill standpoint. He's gotten stronger. He's gotten bigger. But as far as, like, being an offensive lineman, he hasn't gotten much better. And something about that, he's like, he consistently falls off your linebackers. He doesn't punch and grab inside the chest. He, like, those two things have just been, like, derailing his entire career. He hasn't been able to correct him at all. And so I think he's just been, you know, really average. And I know Pro Football Focus has this, like, 32nd rated guard, and there's 64 starting guards in the NFL. And, you know, I completely agree with that. I think he's just really mediocre. And I don't think he's as bad as people make him out to be as far as what he does. And I also think he's probably he's a lot better than Jeff Allen, and he can actually move to first level, which has been very welcome. Any of his problems at the second level, like every single offensive lineman this line has.
I just, once again, I want to say, you know, you use the term again, Matt, you ignorant slut. He really is as bad as he looks out there. I mean, I give him a hard time, but I got to say, I look at him play and I don't see a whole lot of talent. Now, you're really the pro when it comes to the line play. I'll grant you that. But, you know, it's, to me, he's just a disaster out there. He's not a disaster. I wouldn't call him average. I call him very solidly below average is what I would say. We need linemen next year, something fierce. We need a left tackle. Yeah, we need a left guard. We need a right tackle. Maybe not a right tackle just yet, but maybe a right guard. We need a lot of help on that line next year.
Yeah, I mean, like, just from everything I watched, going back to last year, and even through, you know, watching this film article, watching all the film, you know, he's a very average player, like I said. Like, he moves the first level. He's been good in pass blocking. I know everybody made fun of him for him blocking Ibushi, but it was Ibushi was the one who ran into him on that play, you know? And I think the problem with him is that whenever he gets beat, it's like Derek Newton. Whenever those two guys get beat in pass protection, they really get beat. They get, you know, completely turnstiled. And those are the plays that you see, and those are the plays that stick out in your head whenever you look at offensive line. Because, again, you rarely see, like, the good things they do, the average things that they do. You mostly see, like, the big mistakes. You see the replays of the blown block that they get destroyed. They have the sack or the attack on the backfield. And that's what sticks to you. That's what you think about whenever you talk about offensive line play. Whenever you watch all the snaps and watch him play over time, you know, he's pretty average. And, like, I've been right on most offensive linemen you ever wrote and talked about. And so, I mean, I'll stand my word on that. The problem with the Sufio again is that he hasn't got any better from a skill standpoint. And also the fact that the Texans could have taken three starting quarterbacks there for cheap, either Bridgewater, Garoppolo, or Derek Carr, and they took an offensive guard who's been, you know, average in the 33rd pick. And that's the problem with Sufio's son. And it's also him needing to be above average at a position. It's more of his draft position and the opportunity cost than really him as far as a talent production skill point.
Yeah, okay. We'll have to agree to disagree, exactly. And you still suck.
That's fine. We have been disagreeing a lot more lately. I love it. You see the Titans scored, you know, 26 points or 30-something points last week. And we'll talk more about them later, too. But we have disagreed a lot more this year. It's been more fun. Defensively, you know, the Colts, they played really good for the majority of this game. They held the Colts to 23 points, but really the key to me was that they didn't have any big plays. And the Colts scored, it was like long, efficient, kind of grogging drives. There wasn't that 65-yard T.Y. Hilton touchdown pass. There wasn't, you know, Dorsett getting loose on middle field play action. They really held to some, you know, efficient drives, and it wasn't any, like, kind of back-breaking plays. And the other way around, too, the Colts didn't make any huge offensive plays, aside from really that long Andrew Luck run. It was the defense that made the big plays. Robert Nelson, that pick at Houston's 8-yard line. They didn't have a single first down in Indy on the Colts' last two drives of the fourth quarter. They had one first down in overtime. And then also McKinney had that sack to force Indy to punt on the second possession Houston got before the end of the game. And then on that first possession where Houston put it within seven, Andre Howe came from the safety position and made a sack. And they really made this, you know, they made some big plays that gave the offense a chance to win this game. And so they were, you know, a lot of fun in this one. And so we were both, like, really impressed watching this game with Rack's bedtime story, which I guess we can call it game planning. And what did you, what was it that Romeo Crennel did that you, you liked so much from this game?
What I really like is how just flat-out imaginative he is. And then when he picks up that something's working, he's really not afraid to keep going back and banging that drum until they stop it. And what we've, what I've enjoyed most is a lot of A-gap blitzing, a lot of stunts on the A-gap blitzes from linebackers, or using a linebacker and a defensive lineman. I really love the fact that he moved Clowney inside to the 3-4 DE in base 3-4. Because it's taking advantage of him being able to stop the run, because he's just too quick for the guards. He really is. And you shorten that, that, that territory it takes him to get and make an impact on the play. But really, it's we talked for years about how Dick LeBeau was just so imaginative, how he's able to come up with, you know, these zone blitzing schemes and these, you know, exotic blitzes that he came up with. And Romeo Crennel isn't really like, he's not going for the exotic blitz kind of thing. He's just going to blitz. And he's going to find something that's going to beat you, and he's going to keep doing it until you prove that you can stop it. And he really, I just absolutely love me some Romeo Crennel. He's able to do a lot of the things that he's doing right now also because of the play of Bernard Trick. I did it again. Because of the play of Bernard Trick McKinney, because he is so absolutely freaking freaky and dynamic out there on the field. He had 12 total sacks. Our 12 total tackles and a sack Sunday night. I mean, the guy is a one-man destruction crew right now. He's thanks to that, thanks to Cushing in the middle, he's able to do Rack is able to do some imaginative things. Still take advantage of Merciless. Still take advantage of Clowney and their athleticism. You can't tell. I get really fired up talking about this defense because it's been imaginative, it's been thoughtful, and it's been powerful, and it's just an absolute joy to see. Because one thing that you know, we talked about how bad Osweiler was, Andrew Luck wasn't a whole hell of a lot better. That pick that he threw to Robert Nelson was just an awful decision, an awful throw. And you know, I think that it's if you're a Colts fan and you keep trying to see, okay, is this the year Andrew Luck finally joins the cult of the elite? I look at Luck's play this week and I say, no, he's still not elite. He just really isn't. That was a really poor decision. Your elite guys don't make that poor of a decision, and you know they make better decisions. So I'm glad I'm not a Colts fan. I really am. It was a great fun watching that game, and I'll end because I'm getting all giddy and my nipples are getting hard and stuff.
for Luck's performance, that throw to Nelson was the only bad interception, that we saw. That was the only bad, the only bad play Luck really made. Quarterbacks do that. You saw that interception Aaron Rodgers threw last week. The church even moved. You know what happens. But if Luck played on the Texans team, the Texans would probably be 6-0 right now. You know, like, there is just such a big difference between him and Osweiler and Luck and, the 16th best quarterback. He's a top 10 quarterback in this league. And the problem, again, is, the management and the personnel decisions around him, not necessarily him. But for the defense, what I really like is just the way Romeo Crennel has been able to manufacture a pass rush in life. Because watch out. And so to make up for that, one of the things I'm seeing is they're doing that thing where they're running a lot of delayed blitzes, where they're letting their linebackers play running back. And what I mean by that is that sack McKinney had. McKinney's standing up straight, and he's watching the pass protection develop, and then he goes to the hole and just explodes through and brings Luck down. That sack Cal had, it looked like he was supposed to be coming to tight end. The Titans take a block, and as soon as he sees that, he just bursts and goes for Luck. And so, and they also use Clowney the same way. Clowney line up a linebacker up from those rushes to be able to time his rush and go unblocked and just use his blitzing. And so, I just like going back to what you said about the creativity. I think he's done some unorthodox things to make up for without J.J. Watt being there to go get pass rush. Because right now, as far as one versus one, pass rushing goes, Whitney Merciless is the only good pass rusher on this team. Clowney hasn't been a good pass rusher this year. For whatever reason, but Merciless is the only one who can actually beat tackles one versus one, or beat guards one, or beat whoever the offensive lineman is blocking him on his own individually. And so, to make up for that, Crennel's done a lot of cool things. And also, if you go back and look at the box score from yesterday, I think there's like six guys with some sort of hit on the quarterback as far as sacks goes. I think Corey Morris has a sack, Andre Howell has a sack, McKinney has a sack, Merciless has two, I think someone else is half a sack. So like a bunch of different guys made contributions when it came to taking down the quarterback on Sunday. And then again, it goes to Romeo Crennel doing different things to make up for the loss of life. And I've really been impressed by how they've been able to manage that. I thought it was going to be a lot worse than it was heading into a Watt-less world after week three.
Yeah, I'm good with everything you said. Let's move on.
Yeah, so in the spirit of J.J. Watt, I want to kind of bring back what we did where we did the J.J. Watt fair play of the game. And so we'll just say our favorite defensive play of the game. And so on your end, what was your favorite play that defensive player made, and what was it?
I really liked Robert Nelson's pick. I mean, here's a guy who was just signed off the practice squad. And, you know, it was a very poor decision to throw by Andrew Luck. But that was still a heck of an interception. That was a pick to be proud of. In a big-time moment, I'm starting to sound like John Gruden, big-time player in a big-time moment, that he made the play. And so you got to love it. And so that was definitely, you know, the McKinney sack, the way that he read, it was a running back. He had coverage on the running back stayed in on pass pro, and he made that sack on the delay, as you talked about. It was beautiful. I mean, that was quick decision-making, quick athleticism. But that Robert Nelson pick was just, I love it. It was just beautiful.
Yeah, I think that's what we can call it. Big time players make big time plays, big time moments. Mine's Andre Halsak. It's not necessarily like sack, like how he got there. You know, he just ran free, and you brought down Luck. But it's the fact that Andre Hal tackled Andrew Luck, because Andre Hal weighs like 135 pounds. You know, he weighs as much as a fat kid summer camp, and it's like for him to be able to take down Luck in that situation, and you'd be able to pull on his legs and yank him down. We just said, you know, great play. You rarely see Andre Hal be able to do anything like that. So that's mine from this game.
Okay. Yeah, that was a beautiful play. Yeah, I love the way you put that. It's just a mere fact that Andre Hal could actually tackle Andrew Luck, who has probably, 7 inches of height and 50 pounds of weight on him? That was kind of funny.
Yeah, and Andrew Luck's only 6'3". I thought he was a lot taller, you know, watching him. He just looks a lot bigger. I think he's like 6'3", 235, and I thought he was a bigger guy than that. But, yeah, it was great. I can't believe Andre Hal made a tackle. And the other thing that really stuck out to me this game was Kevin Johnson was just amazing. He spent the majority of the time in coverage, and main coverage with T.Y. Hilton. And Hilton had 4 catches on 9 targets for 49 yards. And Kevin Johnson's a legitimate quarterback number one. I know last weekend I paid for the Football Outsiders premium charting stats, which you should do. It's only $25. And it's kind of like you can't get Pro Football Focus's kind of raw stats anymore. You can only get their grades through their paywall. And so make up for that, Football Outsiders offers it. And I wish you can get things like, you know, blown blocks and that sort of stuff. You can get that to the mirror. But it's really good with some of the stuff they have. Yeah, I think Kevin Johnson had an adjusted success rate of like 83%. So teams throwing on him really having success on 17% of the time. And he's been awesome, you know, this year. And he held T.Y. Hilton down. But the problem is that he broke his foot. And on the same foot, he had off-season surgery on. And he's probably off for the year, which is just really disastrous because, I mean, I guess it's kind of disastrous from a defensive level. But, I mean, it's just he was so much fun to watch. And he's having such a good year. And so who's going to replace Kevin Johnson? And also, what do you think Cornell's going to do? Are they going to do, like, you know, where they go 3 cornerbacks, 3 safeties? Are they going to play Eddie Pleasant more? How are they going to make up for Kevin Johnson's injury?
My answer is I have no freaking idea. I mean, it seems like right now our defensive secondary is just a big problem because Demps is hurt, Jonathan Joseph is hurt. He had the arm injury, but I think he is safe to play this week. Was the last that I saw. Kareem Jackson's been out with a hamstring injury, I believe, and those are very, very problematic injuries just merely because of he's an ankle. I confused him with somebody else. But I think that means we see a lot more A.J. Bouye not covering tight ends, which he has been magically delicious at doing this year. And then there's Charles James, who has really struggled this year, especially in man coverage. He has not been nearly the same player he was in 2015. I don't know how we're going to see it otherwise. Kareem Jackson really needs to be in the slot at this point of his career. I don't think he's got the clicks to be on the outside anymore. Got to hope that Joseph's healthy. We're going to see a lot more Bouye, a lot more James. I don't see how we get around seeing a lot more Eddie Pleasant as well with K.J. Dillon getting hurt. I mean, you know, K.J. I think had, 17 snaps on defense this year, so it's not going to be a huge change. and we're going to see a lot more Corey Moore. Those aren't the guys you want to see a lot of snaps from in the secondary. And not only that, you lost your best pass rusher in J.J. Watt. When we came into the season, you could point to the Houston Texans and you could say a couple things very authoritarian. What's the word I'm looking for? Very with authority. You could say a couple, you know, several things. And one of them was, is we've got the top group, the top three cornerbacks in the NFL. This is the best group of the top three in the NFL. You could say that. You could say that with a lot of pride, a lot of joy. And now all three of those guys, one's gone, one's hurt, and one's hurt, but hopefully he's going to play. And that's a pretty big deal when it comes to how the balance between your secondary and your pass rush work together, especially in a Romeo Crennel scheme where he likes to bring blitzes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think since here, I think one of the things that we've kind of seen of this all with this, with the cornerbacks is just they've been pretty deep this year. And so no matter who's come in, stepped in, they've all been, you know, playing pretty well. We go by success rate. AJ Bouye, 67%. Kevin Johnson was 62%. He dropped off some. Andre Howe, 50%. Jamin Joseph, 47%. Kareem Jackson, 46%. And Charles James is 0%. He's been targeted four times. He's got 11 yards a pass. And he hasn't – every pass thrown at him has been caught. And he's given 8.5 yards a pass. So he's one of the worst cornerbacks when it comes to coverage so far this year. But, yeah, Bouye has played well. You know, Reggie Nelson's really fast. He seems like he could be kind of like – man, I can't remember his name – who plays the 49ers here now, who – or Darryl Morris. You know, he's the best, like, fast guy can come in and play. But they're getting some production out of, you know, their guys. I think the one kind of key for the secondary is that the other teams they're playing in the conference, you know, the Jaguars have two really good receivers, Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson, but Julius Thomas hasn't been good. They don't have a third wide receiver. The Colts have T.Y. Hilton and Dwayne Allen. And that's really it. Dorsett's been, you know, really lackluster, and the Titans don't have any receivers whatsoever. And so because of that, the quarterback play isn't going to be as important just because they're a division. Of course, against like teams like Oakland, it's going to be different. But I think they're just going to play a lot of different guys in a lot of different ways, a lot of different positions. You know, I just think they're going to keep going, you know, more and more depth as far as the cornerback position goes. But hopefully, you know, hopefully Jackson plays a solid. And hopefully, John Joseph's healthy and he's better and he plays on Monday. The last thing on the defense was Frank Gore had 106 yards and 22 carries. And my favorite thing about his performance was whenever he had 100 yards plus. Like, no Colts running back is at 100 yards in a game since Vic Ballard in 2012. And then he immediately lost, you know, 3 yards the next run, went to 99 yards and wasn't at that point. And that was, you know, hysterical. And but the majority of Frank Gore's runs were up the middle. He was averaging, you know, he's getting 4 yards, 6 yards, you know, 5 yards. He's really efficient on the ground. And I know we talked about Vince Wilfork playing better to start the year. But as age and size, you think fatigue can already be setting in for him? Or just Indy has a better interior run blocking with, you know, Jack Muhor and Ryan Kelly in the center there?
All right, I think that was really almost an embarrassing game by Vince Wilfork. You're right, he has played a lot better. I think you're exactly right. I think this is a matter of him being old and out of shape and getting tired. But one of the things that we talked about with J.J. Watt out was that, does this mean Vince Wilfork gets more snaps? And clearly the answer has been yes. And that's not a good thing. If he's playing any more than probably 45% of snaps, that's going to be his max on being a productive player in the line. Because it's not only that he, you know, we can talk about the combo of Jack Newhart and Ryan Allen, but a lot of the times it was just Ryan Allen beating Vince Wilfork one-on-one. You're talking about a rookie center against Vince Wilfork, and that's just really – that was the only pile in defense that bothered me throughout that game is Vince just looked bad. He looked slow. He looked old. He looked weak. That was very, very problematic for him, game for him. And just to mention one thing, Darryl Morris is now, I think he's with the Baltimore Ravens. He's no longer on the Texans roster.
Okay. Yeah, I know he started with the 49ers. He went to Texas State also. I think Texas State is like four players in the NFL, and he's one of them. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that with Wilfork. I think he only needs to play. He does not need to play any third down at all. If it's 3rd and 3, you can't have him out there. If it's, you know, 3rd and 5, he can't be out there. Just any threat of a pass whatsoever, he's just, you know, completely worthless. And the other problem I've seen with Vince Wilfork too this year is that he's been going for, like, tackles, and he's also been stunning a lot, and he takes himself out of a lot of plays. like Vince Wilfork is too slow to be tackling running backs unless they run right into him. And so I think he needs to be focusing more on the guy in front of him than trying to make any plays in the backfield whatsoever. Like, how many tackles Vince Wilfork has matters zero whatsoever. He could have zero tackles in the entire season, and that'd be perfectly fine if he's just taking on that center and guard over and over again. But I do think he needs to play less snaps, and also DJ Reader should probably play some more snaps in nose tackle than him, because Reader, you know, is young and he's strong and he's shown, you know, some sort of level of skill there.
Yeah, because Wilfork had nothing. Wilfork put up a perfect donut on his stat line, and I think he got 42 snaps in. That's really not good. Morris is with the Colts, by the way. Forgot to even saw him out there on Monday.
Okay. He's somewhere out there. He's somewhere. Like a star of these guys out there somewhere. Yeah, like an astronaut. Yeah, and I guess also, too, like, going back to what we talked about with the Texans offense, like, yeah, they played one of the worst defenses in the league, so everything needs to be looked at through those sorts of lens. And it's the same thing with Vince Wilfork here and the Texans, you know, run game. They're run defense. They're against a very bad run offense with Frank Gore there, and they got clogged up pretty good. And so that's going to be a problem, especially with the interior running. And so, do you have anything else you want to talk about from this game?
No, I'm good to move on.
Okay. So for the rest of the AFC South, the Jaguars beat the Bears at 1 point, and their offense has been terrible. I wrote about the Jaguars last week and focused on, you know, how bad their run blocking's been. And Blake Bortles, again, like, he's been inaccurate. He's made bad decisions, and he hasn't shown any maturation through the beginning part of this year. And everything's on Bortles from the ball. He's too mistake-prone and inaccurate to do that. But on the other hand, their defense has been awesome so far. I think they're, like, 12th in DVOA entering last week. They've lost all that talent they spent on that side of the ball has really worked out. And also, all the draft picks they made have been, you know, really, really stand out. Like, you know, Yannick and Glockway has been great. Lee Jackson's been an awesome interior run blocker. Jalen Ramsey is going to be pretty much a star in this league, and it's awesome how sassy he is. Tayshaun Gibson back there has really helped John Cyprian, let him play in the box and kind of play a Cam Chancellor role. I mean, really, the only issue is that Devon House has been burned a bunch. And then Tennessee beat the Browns. And Marcus Mariota finally had a really great game, and he was able to throw the ball downfield against Cleveland. And they're 3-3, and they're one game behind Houston. Did you watch any of these games at all? And if so, kind of like your basic thoughts on them? Hello?
Uh-oh, I was muted. Sorry about that. This is the only game that I watched. Yeah, this is the only game that I watched. I watched the Red Zone channel all day, like I like to do on days like that, as I was working. If you're a Texas fan, you have to be really happy, pleased, whatever, that Blake Bortles has not progressed at all. You have to be pleased that the offensive line play has not been good for Jacksonville, because you're right, they're 13th in DVOA. Thought that was defensive. Yeah, that's right. 13th and Dave, that defense is fast. That defense is blazing fast. And it's almost like watching somebody put together a Madden-type defense with, like, 99s everywhere, including at linebacker, with Telvin Smith and Miles Jack. So that's kind of cool to watch. But, you know, we were fortunate as Texans fans that we play in an absolute dumpster fire of a division.
Yeah. Yeah, it came in much better. And then also, you go back to Jaguars defense. Their broken tackle rate last week was 4.3%, which was your best in the league. And I think Minnesota was 7.5%. So they're also the best tackling team in the NFL, too, which is really kind of strange compared to what we've seen before. Also, but I think that's a good kind of example of, like, the speed and how well they get the tackles. But moving on, we got two, I guess, bigger questions I want to talk about before we start previewing the Broncos game. And the first from Lawrence Person again, he said there's a weaker 4-2 team than the Texans, and if so, who? And so the 4-2 teams right now are the Steelers, Texans, of course, Raiders, Broncos, Bills, and the AFC. And the NFC, the Redskins, the Seahawks are 4-1, so they don't count, and Falcons. And so I think, you know, with the way the Bills' defense has played, especially since they're not blitzing as much, I think the Texans are by far the worst 4-2 team in the NFL. And again, it has to do with their schedule. You know, they got to play the Titans. They beat the Colts recently. They beat the Bears. And they beat the Chiefs in, like, a really weird game. And the Chiefs kind of came to their own last week with Jamal Charles being healthy. And the Chiefs aren't playing, like, football like they usually do. So I really think there's a question. The Texans are the worst 4-2 team in the NFL right now.
I think so, and I think pretty clearly. And let me qualify that response, too. Is there's two big reasons I'd say that. One of them clearly is Brock Osweiler, and if you want to add to that, the offensive line play. But we have to get better quarterback play, because the thing those other teams all have, they all have good quarterbacks. The other big issue is just we are so beat up defensively right now. J.J. Watt, Jonathan Joseph, Kareem Jackson, Kevin Johnson, these are big deals. I mean, these are really big deals. And, you know, we've got the best player in the NFL hurt. So if we were more healthy, I'd probably be a little bit more optimistic. I'd probably put them above a couple of the teams that were listed. But we were really banged up. And that's when you're talking about that's your core part of your team. That's the part of your team you're really relying on. I think it's a big deal. So sorry, but, yeah, we are the worst for your team. But we're going to make the playoffs. Woo!
Yeah, I mean, I think so, but still, I don't know just yet. Just because I think the Jaguars can play better, especially offensively, with the horses they have. And then the Titans are, you know, their defense played pretty well, and Mariota can throw the ball actually deep downfield. It's going to make that offense so much better. And it's already been pretty good running the ball 40 times a game. So I don't think it's over yet. And I think after week 8, we'll start breaking down the playoff odds every single week, too. I think it's a little bit too early to be doing that. The other question we have is from Chucky Poo. He said, I want to hear about your opinion on the locker room tiff. I'm prone to follow Brian's company line. It's our competitive nature. So I guess the story came out last week from Aaron Wilson and Lock and Fora. Lock and Fora was that Brock Osweiler and Bill O'Brien were in some sort of film room session, and Brock Osweiler said something about the play calling, and they started yelling at each other. And what's weird about like following the Texans is that it seems like every single time there's some sort of bad loss, there's always these reports coming out that the team hates each other. The feeling in the locker room is negative. It's like a funeral. Nobody likes each other. It always seems like it's always on the verge of everything about to, you know, rallying and, you know, dismantling. And like last year, the same sort of thing happened after they lost to the Dolphins and Falcons. And so I don't really put a whole lot into it. Just because of that, I always hear these sorts of reports, and, you know, the sky stays blue and nothing really, you know, bad comes out of it. And if you're Bill O'Brien, Brock Osweiler says that, he has every right to scream and yell at him, because Brock Osweiler's been, you know, a trash quarterback through the first, you know, 6 weeks of the season this year.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with that. I think my response was, finally, you know, if you're accepting of what we've seen from Brock as a quarterback, then I think, you know, that's the problem. And I'm hopeful, not you know, holding my breath, but I'm hopeful that Bob sees that, because it's very problematic right now. So yeah, they finally did it. Great. The other thing is, I just want to throw in there is that there's two more things I want to throw in there. Number one, Bill O'Brien just kind of seems like a drama queen to me. He really does. Maybe it's the impression that I got from him from Hard Knocks last year, but he really seems like a major drama queen. Number two, Jason Lockenfora. So let's just watch, you know, let's make sure that we're monitoring our sources there.
Yeah, and making sure we don't click on people we don't like, because you only give them any money at all. You know, there's a lot of better writers out there you can read. And so, you know, bleeding into that, the Texans play another primetime game this week. This one's on Monday Night Football against the Denver Broncos. And so, BFC, how excited are you for all the stories about Denver making the right choice to not sign Brock Osweiler, about Gary Kubiak and Wade Phillips being fired from Houston and winning a title in Denver 2 years later, John Elway's genius, Bill O'Brien and Brock Osweiler fighting, and also, most importantly, Charlotte Kale's revenge game?
I am very happy. I will go on record and say that I'm very happy that I really don't pay attention to mainstream media at all, because the even just watching this game is going to be painful from the Gary Kubiak and Son of Bomb and, you know, the Osweiler Simeon question, and, you know, even we've made fun of that we signed the wrong Denver Bronco backup quarterback, right? But that's going to be a miserable freaking game to watch. I might watch that with a mute on. I like Gruden. I do like Gruden. And Mike Tirico is very solid, but I might have to miss this one from the sound standpoint.
Yeah, well, Tirico's not there anymore. He's on NBC doing a pregame show. He's going to take it for Al Michaels. But I like Gruden. He's just like...
Oh, Al Michaels. Perfect, like, I love Al Michaels. Yeah, yeah.
But Gruden's the perfect, like, football crazy, you know, coach or whatever. He's like the perfect balance of, like, you know, football knowledge and crazy, which is exactly what you want. And just, like, his facial expressions are, you know, perfect. I guess I'm talking about this briefly, but, like, I've been hearing really so much about the ratings, and I don't really watch games live at all anymore. I know you said you're watching Red Zone, but how I watch football is I usually wait until the Texans play and watch that game live, and I wait, like, an hour or so afterwards, and I watch the condensed games from that afternoon, and then I'll watch that until the night. And then watch the condensed games from 3 o'clock because you watch a game in 40 minutes. You're not sitting there, you falling asleep or whatever. And there's not so many breaks in play and so many commercials. And it's been a much better way to watch this game. And that being said, I watched the Texans game live, and since on Monday night, I'll get some piece of that. But how many interceptions is Brock Osweiler going to throw in this game?
I think he's going to throw 3 interceptions. I think he's going to have. It's going to be a very poor game. Let's be honest here. If anybody is up in that kind of echelon of defensive scheming and has the personnel to do it, it's Son of Bum. You know, we didn't choke in 2013 or 2012 really because of Son of Bum. In 2012, it was because of the personnel that he was forced to work with. But, you know, Wade Phillips is a dadgum smart guy. And he is going to put together a game plan that is going to actually terrorize Brock Osweiler. He's going to bring Von Miller from everywhere. He's got the defensive backs that can make plays. Akeem Talib, as big of a jerk as he is, he has been playing lights out this year. Chris Harris is one of the best slot corners in the game. Brandon Marshall is a heck of a good middle linebacker. He can cover. This is going to be pretty much a nightmare kind of matchup for us. I do not see a happy ending, really, from this game.
I think he throws 3 interceptions also. I think he throws a pick six, too. Because I think we're going to see a lot of the same thing where he's going to start dumping it off, and then with guys like Chris Harris and Akeem Talib, they're really good. They're also not only, like, great athletes who break on the ball well, they're very smart corners, and they know how to react and how to position their bodies against on the football. And so I think he throws a pick six also. I just think it's going to be a miserable Osweiler game. And again, like, scoring 3 times in a row against the 31st-ranked defense in the NFL is not like the precipice of a turning point at all. It's playing a bad defense that many times in a game, eventually you're going to start playing well and also letting them kind of do what they wanted to. So I think it's going to be a really bad game. I think it's going to be kind of like – it's going to be just like the most miserable thing ever. And I'm really glad we get to play in the AFC South because that can be too bad like a loss in that way. And so on defense, the Broncos, eventually for Houston, the Broncos offensive line's been banged up, and especially at right tackle. I know Vic Beasley had 3.5 sacks. 3 of them, I think, were strip sacks when they played Atlanta, or they played Denver when Atlanta played Denver. And Vic Beasley's not that good of a outside linebacker. He was just using grip moves. And so then the one key for the Texans, if they're going to win this game, which for them to get a lead early and then force Trevor Simeon to throw, and especially make him throw downfield because he's like Osweiler in the fact that he'll take the short throws underneath and set them deep down the field. And if you have a lead and you're putting him by a clause in that box, it makes it really hard for Denver to have to come back. And then also, if you're getting a pass rush going, Merciless can beat Russell Okun. He can beat whoever right tackle they throw out there in this game. And so I think Merciless can have a huge game if the Texans get lead early. And then also you add that together with how Cornell's been using Clowney and McKinney. I mean, you see a good pass rush from Houston also. And so I think that's really key for Houston, to get a lead early and then let the pass rush, kind of go to work and force Simeon into mistakes. What about you? What do you think is the Texans' defensive game plan in this one?
I think the MO is for both teams is the exact same. If they want to get up, they want to pressure the other quarterback to force the ball downfield. Simeon had serious issues getting the ball downfield in his last game. I mean, he looked absolutely terrible after starting off. Like he was able to do that, and we've seen the same thing from Brock Osweiler, right? We joked about we got the wrong backup Denver Bronco QB. We've already used that joke once tonight. Maybe we don't really want Trevor Simeon either. So there's some issues there. It's going to be interesting to see if that was kind of the Gary Kubiak effect, because, of course, he wasn't with the team last week. He was in the hospital, and he's back with the team this week. Is that because Gary was gone that Simeon couldn't do anything? And it seems kind of weird, right? But it's the same exact game plan. Both teams want the other team to have to score the ball, to have to play from behind. And I think what we're going to see, and just guessing, we're going to see a lot of aggressive defense in the first part of the game, trying to force the issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that aggressive defense. Are you worried at all about the Texans being unable to stand their gaps whenever the Broncos run the outside zone? Are you worried about the play action positions in the middle of the field at all?
Of course. I mean, we saw firsthand how effective our offensive scheme was with Kubiak running his play action passes, right? I mean, we had utterly ridiculous success running play action plays under Gary Kubiak, and they're doing the same exact thing in Denver. So, yeah, wow. I mean, every year, you know, we don't have a West Coast offense. We don't have we've got a play action offense. That's what we had when we had Gary Kubiak as the coach of the Texans. So it's a really big concern, because if you're an aggressive defense and you want to make plays, the play action is a great way to get your quarterback into a position to succeed. And Kubiak has his very strong track record of doing that.
Yeah. Again, I think it all goes back to Kubiak. It's not scheme, it's execution. And when you have the right players and they're making their plays, it doesn't necessarily matter what your scheme is. If you get guys in the right spots to do the thing you do. Yeah, but I am kind of worried about that, because this is aggressive defense. The Broncos know what they want to do. They're good at doing what they do. And really, I think for Houston to win, it's kind of like Minnesota, we talked about, where they're going to need to get a lead and they're going to need some turnovers. I don't think this game is any different, just because obviously Houston's scoring on this defense. The one thing the Broncos haven't been very good at this year is stopping the run, especially in between the tackles. And so, again, but that's the problem for Houston, is that they were able to run the ball last week whenever Lamar Miller's been able to get in space. In space against Denver is a lot different than it's in space against Indianapolis. And they've also had problems blocking some of the tackles. They've had problems moving the first level. They've had problems blocking linebackers. And so I don't necessarily think Lamar Miller's going to take advantage of this kind of, I wouldn't say porous, I wouldn't say Swiss cheese, but maybe like, I don't know, an average run defense.
Yeah, so if we stick with our game plan about Lamar Miller running a bunch of inside zone, then we could have success there. I think if you want to look at a guy offensively and say, we need this force to carry us, it's going to be Lamar Miller this week.
Yeah, I just think the offensive line is good enough for where Denver's weak, and I don't think the holes are going to be there for what Houston needs to do. And, again, it just comes down to interior run blocking play.
Yeah.
So is there anything else?
I sometimes feel like it's just like we're a record, right? That's skipping. Sometimes we say the same things every week, and we do to some large degree. But it's like the same ish keeps coming up, you know, week after week after week. The same kind of frustrations, the same kind of thrills, and it's not like we haven't seen this coming a mile away in a lot of cases, you know. But it's sometimes I kind of get a chuckle out of it that yeah. Yeah, we said that last week and the week before, too.
Yeah, I think my favorite one was ever we just eviscerated Brian Hoyer heading into last season whenever Corso was on there. And I just felt so bad on Corso that Brian Hoyer is going to be crappy and there's nothing we can do about it. It's going to be awful. And then he's awful every week and we just kind of have to talk about it. But I think this has been a little bit different. The interior run blocking has been kind of surprising because of Jeff Allen signing, but I don't want to talk about Jeff Allen at all anymore. I'll probably ever get. Let's not talk about Jeff Allen for the rest of the year. So is there anything at all you're looking forward to in this game?
Aside from the smarmy, corny sidelines about Kubiak and Bones and Wade Phillips and all that sort of thing, and how that's going to be the talk the entire week. You mean aside from that? Oh, wait, I'm not looking forward to that. That's right. Yeah, I really am, because I can't wait to see if Sunday night's game was truly a turning point for Brock Osweiler. Does this mean he's actually understanding what's going on? Did he learn something? Did his little spat, as I think was the exact word that Lockefora used with this, his spat with Bill O'Brien do anything to push him over the edge? The answer is no to that, so let's just be clear. But that's the part that's going to be really exciting for me, is I want to see Brock Osweiler come up and push the ball downfield. To be successful as an NFL quarterback, you need a couple of traits, and one of those traits is to be able and be willing to push the ball downfield. Brock Osweiler was willing to the first two games. Teams went to a cover two man scheme, a cover two zone scheme, and they shut that down. He has to get back to doing it. He has to get back to pushing the ball down the field. Just because it's not Will Fuller down the sideline, you can't stop doing it. You need to do it to CJ Fedorowicz in the middle of the field. He's got
– yeah.
Osweiler has got to stop being the check down king, and he's got to – what's the best way to put it? He's got to figure out that he's not going to be successful if he's checking down and he's getting DeAndre Hopkins 4 yards a target. Matt?
Yeah, well, I think it's also he needs to push the ball downfield even when he sees two safeties back there. You know what I mean? Because it seems like sometimes he sees those two guys and he's like, oh, crap, I can't throw downfield now. And he needs to, he should. And I posted that film room article to the NFL Reds in the comments, really funny. They're like, you know, he's had trouble with coverage two defense, and the comments were like, so pretty much the basic default Madden coverage Brock Osweiler has been perplexed by. And it's true, you know, he just sees those two guys back there and hasn't known what to do. At times, again, he needs to throw the ball in the middle field and, you know, Fedora's in the seams and that sort of thing, Hopkins in the slot and all that. But, yeah, I think aside from what we said, there's not really anything I'm looking forward to aside from Lamar Von Miller. I love watching Von Miller. But J.J. Watt out, he's my favorite defensive player to watch play just because some of his spin moves are just so outlandish and ridiculous. He's so strong and he's great stopping the run. Just the speed he has around the edge. And then also the way he sets up his bull rush, where he goes through 325-pound offensive tackles because he gets them on their toes so much. And he's just beautiful to watch. And so, and he's also really funny, too. I like watching him dance as well. And so, yeah, I'm excited to watch Von Miller play. And him against Garrett Newton and him against Dwayne Brown are going to be some, you know, those are pretty good matchups there.
Yeah, but, you know, Von Miller went to ATM, so, you know, he sucks.
Yeah.
He went to a
non-school. Yeah, I don't care about college football. And you probably shouldn't either, the way those horns play, you know. So I guess right now we're each 4-2 at picking games. I was wrong last week by picking Indy. You're right by picking them. So we're tied at 4-2. We're playing for, you know, the Cecil Shorts Memorial Card or whatever. And who do you have in this weekend?
I think the only question, is this going to be another of those 30% of Bill O'Brien coach games in the last 2 years that are blowouts? To me, that's the only question. It's really sad that's where my mind goes, because I just when we lose big. It seems like, and I see this as a game that we lose and we lose big. On the road, we've got a lot of injuries in our secondary. We've got no J.J. Watt. Our offensive line is a shambles. Not only do I see us losing this game, I see us losing it big. So I'm going to put out this number, and I can get crucified in the comments, and I think it's perfectly fair. I'm going to go 41-10 Broncos.
Wow. Even Trevor Siemian at quarterback.
I'm sorry?
I said even with Trevor Siemian at quarterback.
Yeah, because I see at least one defensive touchdown, possibly one special teams touchdown. I, you know, what we've seen is a pattern that Bill O'Brien does not rise to the occasion as a head coach. What we've seen is a very strong pattern, in fact, that when we play good teams, that he doesn't show up. I see no reason to bet against that. That's the trend. It's a clear trend. 41-10. Put it in the paper.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going Denver 23-10, and I think it's just one of those things where I think the most points Denver has scored this year is 32 against Indy. And they forced Vegas and turnovers in that game. And, you know, Trevor Siemian, a quarterback, you're not really going to blow teams out at all. It's like, you know, having a slightly below-average quarterback, it's hard to do that. So I'm going 23-10. I also think Denver has a defensive touchdown for sure. I think either Tlaib or Clint Harris gets a pick six, and it's just going to be the worst thing ever. Like, it's going to be – it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be anarchy. And it's just going to be, you know, terrible and awful in so many ways. Yeah, I'm going 23-10. I don't really think – I think Houston has like a 5% chance to win this game. Like, this is the type of game for Houston to win. Everything's to go exactly right. You know, they have to get an early turnover. They have to get a short field. They have to go up early. Most of the teams have like 3 sacks. Clown needs to have 2 sacks, you know. And that's the best for a game. I just don't see that happening.
Well, no, I could see us having a great game defensively. I could see us having a knockout game defensively and giving up 41 points. It's not going to be the defense.
Yeah, that makes sense. It makes somewhat sense. I just feel it. It's a lot of points. But, yeah, do you have anything else you want to add at all?
No, I think after my day, I am done here. My speaker is broken. My voice speaker is broken at this point.
Yeah, and again, I'm sorry for those of you who listen live. It took a couple minutes for it to get going. For whatever reason, I had problems calling the Skype on this, you know, silly thing. And thank you for listening, everybody. For listening live, thank you for the questions. For those who ask questions, if you're listening live, and for those of you listening, you know, your podcast app, whatever, in traffic or at the office or at school, for listening to teachers, thank you. You probably learn more from us than your teachers, anyways. You know what I mean? And we'll be on next week at 7:00 p.m. on Tuesday night, live again. We'll talk about the Texans' probable loss to the Denver Broncos as well as anything else. Thank you for being on tonight, BFT. Thank you for listening tonight, everyone. My name is Matt Weston. You listen to Battleground Radio.
Woo!
I thought it was pretty good.